but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. Now, built by High Caliber Millwrights, in for John Canzano, here's Jude and Newby and Stephen Vaughn with the Bald-Faced Truth.
That's right. Welcome in. It is a Friday edition of the Bald-Faced Truth. Jude Newby and Stephen Vaughn in for John Canzano. Stephen, what's up, my man?
What's going on, Judah? It's a nice, bad day out.
It's that bad looking?
Well, based off of what it was. I mean, it was so sunny and so nice. What was it, last week?
I like to pretend we have tinted windows. That it's really, you know, it's a beautiful day out there. It just looks a little gray because it's tinted windows.
But
up here.
It's a beautiful sports day. Like, I'll say that.
Oh, yeah.
Beautiful sports day into a beautiful sports weekend into a beautiful Father's Day sports weekend. I mean, come on now.
Happy Father's Day to you.
Thank you. You too.
My friend, and to all the dads out there, happy Father's Day weekend. And thanks for starting it with us. We got a special show for you today, a short show for you today, leading up to about 3:40. We'll join Westwood One's coverage in Omaha. Omaha, Nebraska, as the Beavers take on Louisville at the Men's College World Series. And we have special Westwood One coverage coming up just past the bottom of the hour. And the Beavs and Cardinals go at it at 4 o'clock from Nebraska in the first game for Oregon State in the double elimination field on their side of the bracket. I think Coastal Carolina won earlier today over Arizona. So the Beavers, if they win tonight, they'll play Coastal Carolina on Sunday. And if they lose, they'll play Arizona on Sunday in an elimination game. But it's really cool. Westwood One is doing some broadcasts of these preliminary round games. And we're going to be taking all the Beaver games that we can here on 750 The Game. And you can also hear tonight's game in full on Freedom 970 AM as well, because we got Timber Soccer in Portland tonight as well. It's a busy, busy day, Steven. I know you're here for it. I got U.S. Open on in the background. NBA Finals Game 4 is coming up tonight. Stanley Cup Finals have been just insane with last night's Edmonton comeback. It's been crazy. It's an underrated sports weekend.
Well, outside of, like, football weekends, because, I mean, we all can agree, like, you get a good college football weekend where you get some top 10 teams playing, and then you roll into a, you know, good NFL Sunday weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Then finish it off with a Monday night game. Like, those are the best, obviously. Like, there's no arguing that. I even me, as a basketball guy, I'm willing to admit, like, yeah, those are pretty awesome when you get some great football games on. But outside of that, like, this may be one of the better sports weekends that we'll get.
Yeah.
And I think you get a variety of sports. I think it also helps, obviously, that Oregon State, you know, a semi-local team here, is in the College World Series. You don't get that often all the time. You know, if they weren't in it, maybe we wouldn't care as much about the College World Series. It would go down a little bit. But with Oregon State in it and the chances that they have to win it, I mean, the third best odds, according to Vegas, to win the whole thing, like, they're right in the thick of that thing. Yeah, I mean, this is going to be a fun weekend. With a lot of sports and games that actually matter. Like, sometimes you get the regular season stuff, doesn't matter. This stuff matters.
Yeah.
Like, this is coming down to the wire.
Well, it's fun because it's kind of these, like, secondary or tertiary sports that, depending on your interests, and you know me, I'm a little bit off. I'm a little bit different than a lot of people. But I think we all have those secondary sports that we're, like, really big fans of, right? Outside of the NFL or outside of college football or outside of the Blazers or the NBA or outside the, you know, duck football or beef football. Like, those are the big ones I think people gravitate to. But whether it's soccer and MLS, whether it's golf, tennis, you know, these kind of more individual sports. I mean, the last few weekends have been really, really great. I mean, the French Open in tennis, I'm not a huge tennis guy, but I watched that Sinner Djokovic semi, and then I watched that Sinner Alcaraz final. I watched a little Coco win it on the women's side. It's like going into a big golf major. Like, I'm a big Rory fan, so the last couple of days trying to wake up early and watch Rory in round one yesterday was like, You know, it was a good 2 hours, and then it was a waste of time for 2 hours watching the Rory coaster, is what I call them. But it's a lot of fun, because then the College World Series, the Women's College World Series last week, Stanley Cup Final, like whatever kind of floats your boat, everything's kind of delivering right now, and that's what makes these weekends great.
Yeah, I told John earlier this week, like, I'll watch a major. If it's the tennis major, I'll watch the major. I'll watch a championship game, you know, championship match. I'm not watching, you know, the first, second round, whatever it is. Probably not even watching the quarters, maybe not even the semis, but you get the championship, yeah, I'll watch that. Same with the golf. Same with the majors in golf, like, you get the Masters, you get the U.S. Open, you get the regular Open. I'll watch those type of things. And yeah. So I'm with you on this one. And the U.S. Open is always funny to me with golf, because it's always like, man, these guys are pros and they're so good, but they look so human in these moments with some of their shots, man. Like we were watching earlier, and this guy's, you know, is trying to put the major draw on, doesn't move, just goes straight into the rough, and it's just like, man, like that looked like my golf shot when I'm out there. So I actually enjoy it when I see professionals struggle like that and make it really tough on themselves.
Yeah, it's you know, it's a lot different than any other golf tournament that you'll watch. I mean, the winning score will probably be, I don't know where it will end up being. It depends. Right now it's at -3, but it probably will, you know, it's either stay there or float closer to even par. Best golfers in the world are pulling their hair out right now. Like Scheffler is all over the place with his game. Rohrs is kind of checked out mentally, you know. I can tell after winning the Masters, he's having trouble motivating himself to play some good golf. But he is all over the place. Shane Lowry is having a terrible event. He was supposed to mark his ball on the green. He accidentally picked up his golf ball before he marked it. That's how checked out he is. And he just had to have a penalty stroke. He walked right up to his ball on the green, didn't even mark it, picked it up, and then was like, "Oh crap, I forgot to mark my ball." And it's a penalty stroke. This is the type of psychological demand that the U.S. Open, especially at Oakmont, like this is the quintessential U.S. Open course at Oakmont. And these guys are driving themselves crazy. It's where Dustin won in 16, Angel Cabrera won, beat Tiger in, I think, 2009. Smoking cigarettes all the way down there, Angel Cabrera taking home one of his majors. So It's a really great weekend. So if that's incorporated into part of your Father's Day weekend, I hope it's an enjoyable watch for you too. NBA Finals though, Stephen, Game 4 tonight in Indianapolis. We got the Fightin' Pat McAfees and the Indiana Pacers taking on the Oklahoma City Thunder. Oklahoma City was what, -750 or something like that ahead of this series beginning. Indiana comes back, the stunning Game 1 win, the Tyrese winner. OKC holds serve in Game 2, do what they do. Game 3, that's a swing game. Pacers, big fourth quarter, huge bench effort. Benedict Mathurin becoming a finals legend. Stephen, the Pacers are 2 wins from the NBA championship. The Pacers with Kevin Pritchard and Rick Carlisle and Tyrese Haliburton, the most overrated player in the league, they are 2 wins away. They could win a championship before Portland wins one in, you know, the recent era. And doing so with a former Blazers executive. I mean, it's crazy. I'm still trying to wrap my head around the fact that the Indiana Pacers are halfway to a ring right now.
Yeah, going into the series, I thought Oklahoma City was going to just absolutely destroy the Pacers, because I just wasn't buying the Pacers as a championship-level team. And even after Game 1, I felt like Indiana got so lucky in that game. You know, we saw all the turnovers they had. They had, what, the 19 turnovers in the first half, 24 in the game. And it seemed like, you know, they're down by 10 in the fourth quarter, down by 7 with like 3 minutes, and Haliburton hits the crazy shot after a bunch of mistakes by OKC. Like, I was willing to admit, like, all right, maybe OKC just blew that game. But I will say this, Judah, I still think Oklahoma City wins. And I think they should be the favorite in the series still. They're still the favorites in the betting odds, and I think that they win. But I'm not going to be shocked if Indiana wins this game, because they are a championship caliber team. And I go to Game 3. The way that Indiana played in that game, they stood toe-to-toe with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Physicality-wise, the way they played defensively, they've been a really good team the second half of the season, and they looked like a championship-level team. The thing that I loved about it, and maybe it's just the home court advantage that they had, but they only turned the ball over 13 times. They forced 17 on Oklahoma City, and that's insane to think that they forced more turnovers than they had against this Thunder team, because that's what the Thunder do. They're going to turn you over and turn into transition points. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, 24 points in game three, not a great game as well. I expect him to have a monster game four, because this is what he did in game one. He put up the stats in game one, over 30 points, but he took almost 30 shots. It wasn't a very efficient game. Then game two, he came out and he played like an animal, played like the MVP that he is. I would expect Shai to have a great game. So we're going to see if Indiana can stay pace with them, with Andrew Nembhard, who's guarding him as well. Two Canadians going at it, going after one another. I thought game three was such a well-played game throughout, quarters one through four. And then especially in that fourth quarter, man, it was some really good basketball. And you know, you hear people complain about the way the NBA plays their game. They just shoot threes, they force fouls, all that kind of stuff. You know what? Both teams shot less than 33-pointers. Like, they were going inside, they were playing physical.
I don't think they really shot them particularly well in Game 3 either.
No, Oklahoma State did. They were 10-22, 45%.
Well, that's good.
Indiana was 33%. But Oklahoma City only shot 22 threes in the game. Like, they were going inside for the mid-range jumper that everybody wants, or attacking the hoop, trying to draw fouls. That's what everyone says they want. And they did it, and it was a well-played game. Defensively, they were getting after it. The crowd was amazing. Watching the Indiana crowd also, Judah, makes me think how insane a Trailblazer crowd would be in an NBA Finals, because they kind of the same type of thing. You know, they're wild, they're rambunctious, they are going to go after you, and they're going to feel like they're right on top of you. And I think that did affect Oklahoma City, the way that they are a youthful team. You know, they'd be the second youngest team to win a championship behind the Blazers if they do end up pulling this off. They looked like a young team in that moment when the crowd was on them, but it was a well-played game in game three, and I thought Indiana just was the better team. So now I've kind of changed my mind a little bit and said, okay, Indiana can actually do this. Like, I think this is an actual real series. Now, Indiana has to win this game four. I think if they lose this game, they are not going to come back and win two out of three against the Thunder. But if they can win this game four, they have a legitimate chance to win the NBA championship, where I think if Oklahoma City loses and they're down 3-1, I actually think OKC could still run off three in a row. I don't think Indiana can win two out of three when it comes down to game five, game six, game seven. So I think this is actually, you know, there's been talk of, is it a must win for Oklahoma City? I don't think so. I think it's a must win for Indiana. They got to win this game. If they don't, I think this series is going to bounce back to OKC's favor.
One thing I keep coming back to in all of this, though, is, and it sounds like, you know, for you, you still give Oklahoma City some margin for error here, right? You don't think it's over if they go down 3-1.
No.
How much of that, though, is just based on the fact that you look at how talented they are and how well they play defense typically, and you're giving them the benefit of the doubt? Whereas my counter to that would be, you give Rick Carlisle a 3-1 series lead, you think, I mean, I'm not even sure I know how to pronounce Dagenaud, you know?
Dagenaud's a great coach.
He's a great coach. This is the NBA Finals. This is not your... he's a great coach based on what he's accomplished in regular seasons and the first three rounds of the postseason and back-to-back year. This is a different animal, Steven.
It is, and I think Dagenaud is kind of showing his youthfulness as well this series. Right. I think he's made some mistakes in this series. Now, you know, people were pointing to him starting Cason Wallace and going small, putting Hardenstein out in the lineup. That move has actually worked. Like, they're better with Cason Wallace out on the court, but he's playing, you know, he's going through his bench, going 11 deep. I don't know that you can do that in these type of series. I understand that they've done it all throughout the season. Some of these bench guys are not working out, and he needs to pull the plug on them early and figure out what's going on. I also think that they have not reacted well to the Indiana adjustments. Indiana in game two, they really sagged off on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in the pick and roll. They sagged down, they didn't drop coverage, and Shai destroyed him. Game three, Indiana got up on that pick and roll. They got up straight up and leveled him out, made him have to go backwards, and it really worked. It made Shai turn it over six times in that game. I can't wait to see what Dagenaud has up his sleeve to see if he can have some type of adjustment for Shai to get him in the right spots, get a pick and roll in a better spot against those defenders. I also think that Dagenaud has to make sure that he has his team playing defense as well as possible in this one, because Haliburton was awesome in game three, 22 points, 11 assists, 9 rebounds. They have to slow him down a little bit. Halliburton's, you know, he's not going to force shots, but he got open looks in game three. You can't give him open looks, because if you do, he's going to knock it down. He's a 50% shooter. You got to make him work a little bit harder to get his shots off.
That's such a, would you say he has a good shooting stroke?
No, not at all. But he is a marksman. Like, his percentages are amazing. And so that's why if you can make it tough on him, he's not going to force jump shots. And that's my whole thing. I went on the rant yesterday about that. How everyone says he needs to shoot more, he needs to be more aggressive. But that's not his game. That's not Haliburton. That's not the way he plays. It's not the way he's ever played. He's not going to force jump shots because he can't with the way he shoots. And so if you get up in him, he makes it so much more hard for him to actually score.
He's such a fascinating player, isn't it? I mean, he's such a, it's a guy you want leading your team, right? And especially in high leverage moments, he has shown that. But it does, it's kind of a notch against him in a weird way for capital S superstardom, which is everything we want to talk about with these guys in the NBA Finals. Are you a superstar now? Is SGA becoming a superstar? Whatever the hell that means, and whoever the hell cares if you actually are one or not. You know what really matters? Winning. Winning is what matters at the end of the day. Jokic became a superstar. We all knew that he was very good and the most talented big man in the league and probably the most talented player at the league. But what took him to the next level was winning MVPs and winning a championship in Denver. For crying out loud, what took Giannis to the next level in conversation? Winning MVPs and winning a championship with the Milwaukee freaking Bucks. That's what takes you to the next level in the conversation. Like, the ring is the thing, and that's really the only thing that matters at the end of the day in all of this.
And that's it is crazy. Like, I am about, you got to get your rings, you got to get those accolades, but to think that there was no stars in this finals going into it is just insane work. That means you don't watch the NBA. You don't care about
it. But see, you know what a star is. You watch the game. You understand the NBA. People that are just tuning into First Take all the time, you know, or trying to just consume that level of basketball commentary that's out there that doesn't really dig into anything meaningful without going too deep like LeBron tries to do with his Steve Nash podcast. I know you're not a big fan of that. But there's something to be said for, like, these guys. Now, basketball is won by guys like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and by Tyrese Haliburton. It's really cool that the playoffs have broken this way, at least in the Eastern Conference.
They're also won by guys like Andrew Nembhard and Pascal Siakam, who don't put up the best of numbers, but they are everywhere on the court, and they're playing incredible defense.
How far are the Blazers away from having pieces like
so
that?
So far. No.
Do they have the pieces? You know, do they have the seeds where this plant could bloom in 3 or 4 years?
See, I like to look at it this way, because there's been some Anthony Simons talk this past week, you know, talking about if they're going to re-sign him or trade, whatever it is. And I always compare him to the teams in the finals, and I'm thinking, where would he fit in on this roster? And every single time, it's Anthony Simons is on the bench.
Yeah.
And he'd get the Isaiah Joe minutes. Isaiah Joe played 4 minutes. Because he's not going to play over Caruso. Caruso's going to play minutes over him. He's not going to play over Cason Wallace. He's not going to play over Shea. He's not going to play over Lou Dort. He's not going to play Jalen Williams' minutes. He's going to play Isaiah Joe's minutes, and it's four.
It's like, dude, people forget that you got to play defense to get big, high-leverage minutes. You have to.
And so to answer,
if you're going
to
check out on that side of the floor, you're not getting high-leverage minutes and the most important minutes in the sport.
So to answer your question, I think for the Blazers, there would be minutes for a few guys. I think Denny Avdia would obviously play. I think Simons can play in the NBA final. I'm not saying he can't. He wouldn't get a lot of minutes, but
he's your sixth man.
Yeah.
Microwave offense.
But think about that. Like, on the Pacers, who'd rather have it? Simons or Ben Mathurin? Ben Mathurin's 6'6" and a monster athlete that can score at every level. Anthony Simons can shoot threes at 6'3" and plays zero defense.
Great hair, though.
Great hair.
I mean,
you know, Tumani could play. I think Klingon actually could give you some minutes off of the bench for 5-10 minutes. I think DeAndre Ayton could do the same type of thing. So the Blazers have pieces that could fit on these type of rosters. Just none of the guys that you would be like, okay, I need you to take 12 to 15 shots right now. That's the part that they're missing.
Well, and you know, I talk about the way that the bracket broke in the Eastern Conference. What do you think? I mean, say it's the Blazers. It's not next year. Maybe not. Maybe 2 years from now, we'll see. Is a path to the Western Conference Finals, say, let's just put it at that. Is there a path to postseason relevance more akin to an Oklahoma City type build or an Indiana type build? Meaning Indiana is the 4 seed in the East, correct? And they went to the Eastern Conference Finals as a 4 seed 2 years in a row, which had happened like only once in 25 years, where a 4 seed has gone to the conference finals 2 straight years. Or is it more akin to OKC, where it's like, they were building with lottery picks and building and building and building, got the right guys in, exploded to be the 1 seed in the West, didn't work out for them in the conference finals, returned to 68 wins. Are you serious? I mean, a juggernaut. Like, they became the league's juggernaut that nobody wanted to talk about, really, and has, you know, gotten themselves on the precipice of a championship, depending on how tonight goes. Is Portland's build more in the Indiana mold with a veteran head coach and a GM who gets it, Or is it more in the OKC mold where it's like, hey, we got the young head coach that hits and all of our young pieces are starting to come together here?
It's Indiana because we've never seen any team built like this OKC team where they have so many assets and so many good young players. I mean,
you can't replicate that.
You cannot replicate that. What they have done is insane and amazing. And so I think if you're the Blazers, you'd be looking at an Indiana model. But I think all the teams in the Western Conference, Judah, they are going into this offseason thinking, okay, how can we become the second best team in the Western Conference? And by that is then we at least have a chance in the Western Conference Finals. Maybe some luck happens. Maybe somebody gets hurt on OKC and you can find your way into a finals. But you're not going to compete as the number one seed in the West. You're just not going to do it. And so I think every team right now is looking at it and saying, look, if we add this player, if we add these guys, if we add this coach, can we get to, you know, a top four seed or the number two seed, whatever it is, and give me that second best team in the Western Conference? Because right now it's OKC and it's going to be that way for years to come because of how young and how many assets they actually have.
Well,
they're just scratching the surface. They're going to be so in 2 years, they're going to be so much better than they are right now.
I can't wait for when San Antonio gets cooking in a year or two, just as a basketball fan, because I think that would be a fun San Antonio OKC.
They're the most intriguing team because right now Kevin Durant is favored to go to the San Antonio Spurs. And do the Spurs want to sacrifice some of their assets that they have? And they have quite a bit of assets to go for a 37-year-old. How good is that Spurs team if Wembanyama comes back healthy and you can keep De'Aaron Fox and Stephon Castle and Durant? Are you a 5 seed? Are you a 4 seed? Like, is Wembanyama ready to take that step and be the main guy on a playoff team, on a finals contending team? I don't know. They're a fascinating case because they have a couple different directions they can go, and it kind of depends on what they think of how good Wemby is right now at this moment.
Who you got tonight?
I think the Thunder win. Unfortunately.
I think so, too.
I want the Pacers.
I also think
there's something about the Thunder that I really dislike. I don't know if it's the Seattle thing or what, but everything I watch about them, I should love them because they play so hard. They play great defense. They play basketball kind of the right way. I hate watching them play basketball. I absolutely hate it.
Wait. Aesthetically?
It's a hate watch.
I don't understand.
Shea's not the most, the way he's herky-jerky.
Herky-jerky, free-throw merchant. Yada, yada.
I understand how good he is. I love watching him play, but I hate that team for some reason.
I thought you loved defense.
I know.
The way they play team defense should get you fired up.
I should love him. I should love him. I hate him.
Maybe it's their colors, too. Weird color scheme, you know?
I also am the guy that's going to hate everything that is like, oh, this thing's popular now. I hate it automatically.
That's true. Yeah, like, thanks. I hate it.
I'll like it, and then I find out everyone likes it. Oh, I hate it now.
That does check out.
That's me.
That really does check out. All right, when we come back, we'll rip around some of the other headlines and some audio in the world of sports. And then at 3:40 here in about 20 minutes or so, we'll join Westwood One's coverage of the Men's College World Series, Beavers in Louisville, with a first pitch at 4 o'clock. Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn, right here with you on the Bald-Faced Truth 750 The Game and on the BFT Radio Network.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
All right, welcome back. Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn, kicking off your Father's Day weekend with a short edition of the show. In about a little over 10 minutes, we'll join Westwood One's coverage in Omaha of the Men's College World Series, Beavers and Louisville, in the first game out in Omaha for Oregon State, making their first trip out there since 2018 when they won it all. Freshman Dax Whitney is electric. He's going to have the start tonight for the Beavs against Louisville.
I mean, I kind of had this was my vision when I made that decision to come here. I really wanted to come here the whole time. It was more of like a, if I get lucky, I'll go to the draft. I wasn't planning on it. I was really set on coming here, and this is exactly what I dreamed of. This is why I came here, because I knew we were capable of it, and I knew we're capable of going further than we are right now. So that's exactly why I came here.
It's interesting. You know, Mitch Canham didn't go with Dax to lead off the regional against St. Mary's, and the Beaver pitching struggled mightily in that game one. St. Mary's got him, and then the Beavs won out to win the Corvallis regional. Had the massive comeback with Florida State. Dax did start that game in game one and pitched actually pretty darn well. He just threw a ton of pitches. He was like at 100 pitches through 5 innings, struck out a million people. Steven, what is it like, man? It's a freshman taking the hill at Omaha for a true blue blood in college baseball, at least in these parts.
Yeah, I mean, I think you do have the worry in the back of your mind, like, oh man, this kid's 19 years old. Like, how is he going to react to this situation? But he's been so good all season long, and he was, you know, like you said, he had so many strikeouts in that game against Florida State, 111 strikeouts in 71 innings. Like, this kid has electric stuff.
Oof.
I think for me, it would be a short leash on this guy. Just because he's 19. And I think if he shows the signs of struggling at the start of the game, like, man, you cannot run that risk of letting a 19-year-old just lose that composure right away. But I don't think he will. Yeah. He's shined in these type of situations. He may not go 5-6 innings. He may go 3-4 innings and have, you know, 6 strikeouts or 7 strikeouts and have a really good game because he's throwing a lot of pitches. But, man, I would have a short leash on it just because you're running the risk of, man, you're throwing out the freshman out there in the big-time situation. I think you always are going to have that worry in your mind, but I think this is a guy who, as he said in that clip, like, this is why I came to Oregon State. Like, I think he's ready for this situation, and he'll be fine.
Game 4 of the finals tonight. Tim Legler sounding off on it with OKC trailing 2-1.
I'm not switching from OKC being the favorite. I understand, you know, some people are starting to waver on that a little bit, and you know, we're caught up in this culture, Dan, in sports. I'm sure you see it all the time. Like, when you try to talk positively about one team, people on the other side automatically think somehow you're slamming their team. You know, by me saying, I still think Oklahoma City's going to win the series, I'll take a shot at Indiana. I thought it would be a 7-game series from the beginning because I had so much respect for Indiana's offense. And then I think they've got to make some adjustments. I think Mark Daigneault, there's some things he's done so far that I haven't agreed with in this series, and I think he's going to have to make some adjustments, or they could be in trouble. So I think that you're going to see something different from them offensively, and certainly the defensive pressure that we've watched that team put on people all year, I think that's got to be on full display tonight. They understand falling down 3-1 could lead to a dire situation for them.
And that's my thing. Because Carlisle is on the other bench, I think going down 3-1 is curtains for Oak City. I do. I they're immensely talented, but this is a different ballgame.
It could be. And Carlisle, you know, you talked about it, and I agree with you. I think Carlisle has been the better coach in this series. I think Daigneault has the ability to make some adjustments. Like I said, how they defend that pick and roll for Indiana, if they're out and they're, you know, hedging on Shea really hard, how does Daigneault combat that? Because that's a way you can do that. You can get him in different spots. You can run different picks. You can run different guys to run pick and rolls and put different players in the defensive pick and roll slot on defense where that aren't used to it. A guy like Tyrese Haliburton who isn't used to it, or even a guy like Benedict McTheron when he's in the game. He's not used to running that. So I think Daigneault has to do some adjustments. And I think you're right. Carlisle has been amazing so far in the way they do it. And I just love the way that they, you know, they press. Like, Indiana's pressing 94 feet up the court. It's just amazing what they do. And I think you're right. Carlisle's the guy right now, but we'll see what Daigneault has. Daigneault, he's coach of the year for a reason.
Yeah.
Let's see what he has in his pockets.
And I don't want to be this guy, but I'd be surprised if Shea doesn't go to the free throw line like 25 times tonight. Isn't that the way these things go? Shea's going to get a million free throws to will him back into it?
It could be, but I'll say this. Andrew Nembhard has played amazing defense. He's not known as being the best defender, but maybe the fact that they've played so many times together on the Canadian national team, growing up together, they played together. Like, these are guys that are very familiar with one another, and he's not falling for the tricks that Shea does that usually work. And so, I mean, he's going to probably get 8 free throws at least because that's what he does. That's what Shea does. But I'm not expecting a 15-16 free throw game. Nembhard's been too good for it.
The refs aren't going to just bend the whistle that way.
I don't think so.
We'll see. Dan Lanning talking about work-life balance, his take on it.
Yeah, I don't think there'll ever be a balance. That's just not the reality. You know, to be great in this profession, you have to work extremely hard. It takes a lot of time. But I do think you can be intentional, you know, so we were having exit interviews from our official visits this past weekend. And even, you know, our recruits' parents knew that I had a flag football game that I was going to try to go watch at 1:30, regardless. And so sitting in that last exit interview, one of the moms asked me that question, when's your son's game? I said, 1:30. She goes, okay, we're not going to go longer than that, I promise. So it's great when they're on the same page as you of what you want to be able to accomplish. But will there ever be balance? No. There won't, but at some point in life, there'll be time for that balance down the road.
That's a good take. Who is that with? Do you know that interview?
That was with Greg McElroy.
Oh, cool. Cool. Yeah, I think that's a good take. And look, these guys get paid a lot of money, right? What does he got, like $11 million a year? So it's a different...
He gets it, yeah.
You know, it's a different equation than a lot of us.
Yeah, I'm not going to be able to go to every sporting event of my kids, but if I can, like, hey, recruits, moms, can you, help out a little bit and say, yeah, let's get out of here at, 4 o'clock so I can go see it. Like, I think it's great. And he knows, like, look... Not that there's a lot of pressure on him because he's very safe in his job, but he knows there's pressure to winning some big-time ball games, and he's a guy that works at it, and he's a guy that admits, like, look, I've made a lot of mistakes last season in that Rose Bowl game. I got to be better. So I think Lanning's great, and I love that quote.
It's a great, great weekend. So coming up next, we're going to actually sign off from the show here momentarily, and after that, Westwood won from Omaha for Oregon State Louisville. It's going to be...
Beavs win, right?
Going to be a lot of fun.
Don't be that guy. Come on now.
Look, it's tough. It's tough. Louisville is fast, but you know what?
I think you're a Ville guy.
To me, the Beaver offense is a sleeping giant at any given point, and then they just hammer you for 7 runs in the first inning, 6 runs in the third inning. This is a big park, though. You know, it's not the same as Goss and the wind and everything. It's tough to get the ball out in Omaha. But I think the Beavers win. I think they find a way to get it done. They meet Coastal Carolina on Sunday. What about you?
I'm with you. I think they score enough, and I think Dax Whitney has a nice game. I think he goes about 4 innings, but doesn't give up any runs. I think the Beavs get on early and win the game at the end.
All right. First trip out there since they won it all in 2018. We'll see what kind of start they get off to tonight. So that's coming up next in First Pitch just past 4 o'clock. We'll be back on the air with the Bald-Faced Truth on Monday next week, 3 to 6 p.m. For Stephen Vaughn, I'm Judah Newby. Have a lovely Father's Day weekend. Everybody here in Portland, we'll get you a College World Series from Westwood One coming up next.